Okay, good morning to everyone. Had a little technical glitch here, presentation system, but we're going to go ahead and get started while they work on it. Which numbers do you need the that overhead, or the, not the overhead, but the PowerPoint for? Which agenda items?
Mayor, we will, let's turn on the Elmo real quick. All the councils should have a handout of the PowerPoint, the update on the...
You want to start with item three? Oh, number one, I'm sorry. Okay, well, welcome to the study session, Mesa City Council, for the morning of Thursday, January 15th, 2009. We'll begin with the first item on the agenda, which is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed acceleration of State Route 802, also known as the Williams Gateway Freeway. Mr. Butler.
Mayor, Council, good morning. I'll try to look around the Elmo. Thanks for allowing us to come for you this morning. We wanted to provide an update. It's been exactly a year. It was January of 08, the last time we came forward to talk about the concept of proposing state route of accelerating State Route 802, the Gateway Freeway. And at that time, we came forward really to seek council direction on whether this was a concept that they would like to pursue. Mesa's been very aggressive in the past in trying to get our freeways in as soon as possible for commuting purposes, for economic development purposes, and we saw a great opportunity with the 802 for two reasons. Certainly the first of which being the economic development activity that's occurring around Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. And the second...
Perhaps for everyone, we can update us to exactly what the 802 is, just briefly.
Sure. Okay. In fact, why don't... I could walk through the presentation, Mayor, and we've got broken into sections
and
really give some background, especially for those of you who may not be as familiar with the project.
Okay.
The first point we wanted to bring out, though, is, you know, really, what's the urgency? Why are we here this morning? And it really deals with the fact that the legislative session has started, and 2 years ago, the legislature allocated $20.4 million in statewide transportation acceleration needs funds. This is when the state had a surplus, and they were looking to accelerate infrastructure projects around the valley. $20 million was set aside for the Gateway Freeway. Well, unfortunately, we hear in this budget shortfall that they're looking at sweeping the entire STAN fund and including our money, and that really presents a problem, obviously, because we've moved forward with this assuming that we would have that money to help offset the cost of getting this infrastructure in sooner. So we're here today to walk you through this, but also to talk about the urgency of why we need to make a decision on this.
Scott, real quickly, can you explain why the funds were allocated by the state from the STAN funds? What was one of the purposes for that? Because I think that's important, because in their effort to take it away, they're actually going against the whole purpose of allocating those dollars.
Sure. When it was initially allocated with the budget surplus, they thought this was a good way to infuse some additional economic activity into the state economy, to create jobs, to get this infrastructure in sooner. And so when $20 million was set aside for Gateway, it was initially allocated for right-of-way acquisition. And, of course, then with the economy booming and land prices around the airport soaring, we thought this would be a good way to help offset some of these escalating land prices at the time.
Yep.
Okay. All right, we're back up on that. We'll just all slide down. Apologize, Mayor. Mayor, to your point, we wanted to walk through just quickly a little bit about what is State Route 802, the Gateway Freeway. It extends from the Loop 202 just north of the gate of Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport all the way to the US 60 in Pinal County. The actual junction with the US 60 hasn't been determined yet. It will be somewhere between Gold Canyon and Florence Junction. So that's actually part of the study that's being conducted right now. The Maricopa County section does extend from north of the airport to the county line at Meridian Road, all of which is within the city of Mesa. And this project was fully funded by Proposition 400. So all of the construction, design, right-of-way costs will be paid for and financed through the Prop 400 funds. And in that, there were two phases of the Gateway Freeway, the first of which extending from the Loop 202 to Ellsworth Road, and the second phase from Ellsworth Road to Meridian.
Councilmember Summers?
There have been a couple of Prop 400s, I think, since then. Would you talk about the transportation Proposition 400, what was part of that really briefly, and where we were on the timetable? As I recall, most of the projects in Mesa seem to come at the tail end of this, and there's a risk that the Prop 400 is a sales tax, is it?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
And so given our fairly tenuous situation with sales tax, if we wait too long on some of these, the projects that might not happen could be here if we don't help accelerate them, correct?
That's correct. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, Proposition 400 was the countywide transportation tax passed by the voters in 2004. It extends from 2005 to 2025, so it's a 20-year program divided into four phases. The city actually has projects in all four different phases, but the Gateway Freeway in particular is a phase three project. What we're hearing from ADOT right now, hearing from MAG right now, obviously Proposition 400 is suffering the same economic challenges that we all are, and revenue collection is coming in below estimate. The good news for this project is, though, that it appears that all projects except for the final couple of years of Proposition 400 seem to be in pretty good shape. There's a lot of solvency in the program because the first few years had some very strong tax collections, and in fact the first few years of the program came in a lot higher than the voter projection, or the projections were when it was put to the voters. So that provides a little bit of cushion, but as the mayor knows through the discussions at MAG, overall the program's facing about a $5 billion shortfall, but that's something that the MAG Regional Council is going to continue to monitor, try to make adjustments to make sure that we can get all of these projects built as close to on time as possible. Mayor, just wanted to focus in this morning on phase one of the project, and that is the first mile section from the Loop 202 to Ellsworth Road. It includes the full system interchange, and so when we start talking about the price of this, that, you know, 1 mile of freeway has certainly grown in price, as Dan can attest to over the years, but to just remember that a lot of the cost associated with this first segment is really in the interchange. ADOT right now, to Councilmember Summers' point, ADOT now is scheduled to begin construction in 2016 of this first mile. And there's a map included to show you our latest preliminary design of the first mile of the freeway. What we're proposing, yes.
Just to make sure, this looks like a freeway to nowhere in the mm-hmm. first mile.
Sure.
Would you explain why we would have, or is that part of your presentation too?
That's coming, but we can certainly address that now, Mayor. What we would like to do, and part of the discussion that we're getting to, is what's the purpose? Why is it a benefit to the city of Mesa to seek this acceleration? And we again think that there are two or three primary reasons. The first of which being to open up. We all know the explosive growth and development that's occurring around the Gateway area, not just within the city of Mesa, but south of the city in Queen Creek and Pinal County. The challenges of infrastructure in the southeast portion of our city is pretty extensive as people from outside the city flood these roads passing through to get to Mesa and Tempe and Phoenix. And so this infrastructure, getting in the 802 sooner, will help alleviate some of the traffic concerns in southeast Mesa. Along with that, when you get the freeway and better access into the area, we believe that will help accelerate some of the economic development opportunities that are occurring in the area. But probably most importantly, as we now start planning the east side of the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport and determining how the future east side terminal will connect with the surrounding roadway networks as we get ready to put in Ray Road and Haas Road, and we look at upgrades to Ellsworth and other areas such as that. How does this all fit together, and how do we make the east side passenger terminal function from freeway to freeway and connecting with our surface streets? What we're proposing to do under the acceleration is to move up the construction and design and right-of-way by a four-year period. Construction would move from 2016 to 2012. Per the MAG acceleration policy, all of these acceleration agreements require approval by the MAG Regional Council, the State Transportation Board, and ultimately the City Council before we move forward. Again, we discussed the benefits of the acceleration, and the one point that I want to reiterate as well is we do have an opportunity, if we act quickly, we hope to still utilize these stand dollars to offset the cost, and that would be a benefit not only to the city but to the program, to the entire Prop 400 program as well. So the new information that we have today that we haven't had prior to this as we've discussed the concept is really the cost estimates of what we're looking at. There were certainly assumptions made based on preliminary engineering and design concepts for the freeway, but now we've worked closely with ADOT over the past year or two to get to a point where we value engineered this facility to something that meets the needs of Mesa and allows us to get it in the most cost-efficient manner. The cost of the entire first mile, including all the freeway interchanges, is $217 million. The city, if it chose to move forward with the acceleration, would issue highway project advancement notes, which is a legislatively created financing mechanism for freeway infrastructure. The city of Mesa actually helped develop this program, as I see Councilmember Kavanaugh nodding his head, when we sought to advance the Loop 202 from Country Club to Gilbert. We were faced with a similar situation where the state's bonding capacity was constrained, so we looked for a mechanism that would allow the city to use some of its capacity to move this facility forward, and we worked with the legislature to create HPANs. Now, the good news is, of course, since Prop 400 has fully funded this facility, the HPANs would be would be paid off by using Prop 400 proceeds. So when they're supposed to be coming in, so construction is set to begin in 2016, when the money starts coming in for that construction is scheduled, we'll simply take that money to pay off the outstanding notes that the city has issued for this facility. Obviously, by issuing these notes, we're going to assume the interest expense of carrying this for 4 years until the Prop 400 money retires the debt. The total for those 4 years for the right-of-way design and construction comes to just under $40 million, $39.6 million. We went to the legislature last year and sought permission to utilize the $20.4 million not just for right-of-way acquisition that had been allocated to the STAN account, but to use that to offset interest expense. Part of the rationale behind that is, as we started looking and talking to property, as ADOT started talking to property owners, the $20.4 million was really only going to be able to purchase one parcel out of the freeway corridor. It wasn't really going to go that far. But if you use this to offset the entire facility, you're able to acquire all of the right-of-way, including the one parcel that would have cost $20 million. So we thought it would be a good use, a prudent use of the stand dollars to have that apply towards the overall interest expense and be able to acquire even more right-of-way. So after you take the $40 million that's total that for the carrying costs, you take away the $20 million in stand, that leaves $19.2 million outstanding that would be that the region, that Maricopa County, that MAG and the City of Mesa would be responsible for. MAG has a standing policy that those expenses are split 50-50. So at the end of the day, with all these numbers thrown out, in order to do this, Mesa would be responsible for coming up with $6.5 million in interest expense.
Scott, do the math on that. Explain the math on that, because that doesn't.
We were trying not to throw even more numbers in.
Just say that there's an offset there.
Yeah, there is an offset by the fact that we're issuing the HPANs. We also earn interest from that, so that offsets our costs. So the gross
cost is one half of $19.2 million, which is $9.6 million. And what you're saying is about $3.1 million of interest earnings that we'll have on those funds while we have them. That'll make our net cost $6.5 million.
That is correct.
And that $6.5 million is not a check that we have to cut in the next 6 weeks. It's spread over how long?
The city would have to commit to the construction phase.
I'm asking when we're going to cut the check for $6.5 million.
We would begin cutting that in 2014.
And spread over how long?
A three-year period.
That's fine. In 2014, we'll have a cash obligation of $6.5 million, which we'll pay over a three-year period. So we have plenty of time to work it into the budget projections, forecasts, things like that. And it will not affect the current situation, or is not affected by the current situation we find ourselves in. We can plan our way into this, because we're talking 5 years from now.
Mayor, that's correct, Mayor.
Mayor, in council, and Scott, let's make sure we're clear too. We have the option of this program. What we're asking council and what we're seeking is, what we're talking about moving forward with the entire acceleration of the entire project from design right away in construction. We also have the option, if you want to break it up into phases, of the completing the design and right away first, and then evaluating whether or not both from a financial standpoint, from a construction standpoint, from funds available in the region, whether we move forward to the construction side phase, after a design and right away. But to the mayor and council, we kind of talked about this before, let me just emphasize. The most important element right now is the timing of other projects and the development of this entire area. Right now, we have already approved our citizens have approved projects in this area, whether it's railroad construction, railroad utilities, Haas Road construction, and then with the development potentially of the East Terminal, the developments around Gaylord and the DMB properties and all the property owners in that area. Right now we are in a state of uncertainty as far as the design element of this first mile. And that's why the first mile is very important. First mile connects the 202 to Ellsworth, but it also is interconnected with all of the access going in and out of this area. And being able to design and know how that's going to lay out will help us, is important for us to know so we can move forward with railroad, utilities. So this is all kind of wrapped together. So our need to accelerate, as much as it is for the actual physical development of the freeway, it's probably at this point more important for the sake of other projects just to put the design down, to acquire the property. There's property owners out there that have already been talking to ADOT about purchase, but they're held in limbo until this is done. And so this is a way of leveraging, taking the $20 million really, mm-hmm. and leveraging it to accomplish a great more than it would by itself just to purchase right away. So that's how we're looking at it. That's why this is an important project for us to move forward. We would have the option, even the commitment to move forward, we'll still be able to come back to the council. And how much obligation would the city have? Scott, answer this question. If we only complete the first phase of the design and right away, what is then the city's out-of-pocket expense for just that phase?
No money.
Okay, so that's... but assuming we have the $20 million,
assuming the stand dollars
are in play, we can move forward with acquiring the right of way from the property owners out there, providing certainty to the alignment of these roads, whether or not 202 gets, I'm sorry, the 802 actually gets built in the accelerated time frame, knowing then that we can move forward, which we have the funding for Ray, Haas, and other roads, is significantly important. So this is a key part of this whole project, is just moving this forward and getting beyond where we are today, where we're kind of in a sense of standing still, waiting for someone to make some decisions about this project.
That's right. The um, we as Mr. Brady stated, we've drafted this to really provide the protection to the city before the construction phase so that we can decide whether it's still a benefit to the city and still makes fiscal sense to move forward. And Mayor, to your point as well about making sure then that this dollars, even though they're in the future or in the financial forecast, and I'm going to look back to Brian on this, but I know, and Chuck, but they have already, and they have this project in mind for the financial forecasts that have already been run, so this would not be an additional burden on beyond the outlay, obviously, of dollars, but this is something that they have taken into account in planning for the future.
Councilman Fenter?
Under current status, it talks about ADOT doing the currently doing the environmental assessment. We're trying to see if we can go ahead with design acquisition while that process is going on. We don't anticipate any junkyards or hidden landfills or anything. Nothing initially that would cause us any concern on that.
You know, I'll maybe let Alan answer some of the technical about the EA status right now. What our understanding is, I believe, is that the EA portion, the Maricopa County portion of the EA, so all the portion in Mesa, has gone according to plan. It's when you get into Pinal County that they're running into a few surprises or finding areas that may cause an alignment to need to be adjusted. But I believe everything's going as planned in Maricopa County.
Mayor Smith and Councilmember Fenter, that's correct. In reality, the environmental assessment is for the entire route, not just the Maricopa County section or the Pinal County section. And the real key action is what's called the Record of Decision, which is basically when the Federal Highway Administration accepts the environmental assessment, the recommendation for the exact alignment. And that's anticipated to actually occur in early 2010. ADOT has indicated because in the Maricopa County section, there are hardly any options as far as different alignments. There was a preliminary study done by MAG a few years ago for this section. They're anticipating nothing that they haven't already become aware of. So ADOT indicated they'd be comfortable actually starting the design on this, especially this first mile, because of the arrangement of the where 202 is already and the other constraints there, that there's virtually no chance it's going to change the location or they're going to find anything they're not already aware of. So they were indicated they're comfortable actually starting the design on that section a little bit before the final record of decision on the entire alignment.
All right, so to summarize, see if I got this right. This is in the current plan to begin in 2016. Mm-hmm. We're seeking to accelerate this by 4 years. Okay. The state has allocated $20 plus million to pay for costs related to that acceleration. In that acceleration, we get the benefits that Mr. Brady talked about, finalizing right-of-way, start to begin to acquire property, and so the private property owners in that area are not sitting there in limbo for many years. We also get to proceed with accelerated environmental assessment. We get to proceed with design, and we don't have to make a final decision as a city to move ahead to actual construction till 2011. If we decide to move forward, then we issue these notes and we move ahead with construction, and the interest, but for about $6.5 million, is covered by these state funds, the STAN monies. If we decide not to go on with continue with construction, we have a designed freeway, right-of-way dedicated, and perhaps much of the right-of-way actually acquired, and the city is out of pocket nothing. Did I miss something there?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Good, right. Great summary.
Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. Mr. Butler, what mechanism ensures that we get the $20.4 million? I don't understand that section.
The $20.4 million is in state statute. As they pass the budget, it then becomes state law of how that money was allocated to the region. So it would take another act of state law, basically through the budget process, for that to be taken away. what we've discussed with many of our friends in the legislature from many of our Mesa delegation has been that if we can get this moving forward, that it demonstrates that these projects, especially in these times, you're talking about projects that are creating jobs, that are quote-unquote stimulus, that these are the type of projects that the state should be investing in these tough budget times. And so we're hopeful that they will see the merits of this program and allow that $20 million to remain.
Now, we still, in order to move forward even with the right-of-way and design, which is going to cost us, what's the estimated on that? Is it 45?
About 40.
45 million or so?
45 million.
Now, let me make clear is that even as we move forward with that, that obviously $20 million doesn't cover 45 million.
Mm-hmm.
But there are funds that is the 20 million plus what's already designated in the Prop 400 for this project. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? To help pay for the total.
To help pay for the total, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. But there still is, at the end of the day, when these notes, these HPAN notes are issued, and this is what the council has to understand, is we will pledge the city's excise tax to back that up. But because we will also have a commitment from ADOT to pass through the money from the $20 million plus what they get from the region, that reduces our liability and our exposure to the excise tax. But there will be, at some point, the possibility, I mean, that's what how that would work. The good news is we only do that when we know with certainty that ADOT, and we've done this before, and it's not been a problem, when ADOT has the funds available, whether it's from Prop $400 or the $20 million committed to this project. So the risk to the city is significantly mitigated as a result of that. But that's how it becomes. But there is some risk to the city overall, but we feel very comfortable, and we've done this in the past, that because those other dollars are there. And that's why we have to proceed. One, we want to proceed diligently now because there are funds that are sitting there, and we don't want those funds to be swept or be used for another purpose. Sometimes the longer dollars sit there that are unspent, other people start wanting to
And that's
those.
The important thing is that dollars were allocated in 2006,
yeah.
But they've been sitting there sort of in limbo awaiting actual use. And what we're talking about today, and the reason we are talking about it today, is that the longer they sit there in limbo, the more susceptible they are for being taken by the legislature for another use. So we're moving forward now to really finalize the steps that we have to take as a city. MAG has this on their agenda, in a couple weeks,
mm-hmm.
to have a formal approval. We're hoping and talking with ADOT that it will be on the ADOT board's agenda soon after MAG takes action. So we'll have all three parties to this who have taken some formal action to basically put these monies to use. And once those formal actions take place, they're no longer in limbo.
Right.
And hopefully then somebody will come in and grab monies that are being used. But while they're in limbo, they're at risk,
right.
Especially in the current budget environment.
And just
the
last thing, if we had spent the $20 million as it was originally anticipated for just the right-of-way purposes, we would have been able to buy maybe one parcel?
One parcel.
One parcel out there, which would have not been sufficient for this entire project, just even for this first, I mean, I'm only talking about the first mile. We found that we have come up now with this mechanism that will allow us to leverage the $20 million plus using what's in Prop 400 to move forward immediately, as you heard, for the city, no cost for the design and right-of-way of that first mile. So we're stretching those dollars, if you would, to accomplish a great deal more.
Okay. So while we don't have any formal action Councilman Cavanaugh had a question.
Thank you. Maybe more just a comment. I don't want to compliment staff on the presentation. And it does give me a sense of deja vu because back in 1996 when I first came on council, we got a briefing from staff about the Red Mountain Freeway, the 202, giving us the bad news that it would be 18 years before it would be complete in 2014. And the staff throughout the years, I think, has taken a very strong leadership role in explaining to the council and the community the benefits associated with acceleration of the freeway and in devising creative ways that ended up being leadership ways in the state to get these things done. And I think every time the city has taken an action to move to accelerate the freeway development, the benefits produced for the community have been many times over the cost of doing it. And so I think this is a wise course for us to do. And again, particularly in the legislative climate, I think it's important to move ahead to finalize that agreement. So I do support the recommendation. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Summers.
I'll echo those statements and agree fully. I've said it before that, and copying it from probably many people, that freeways really, once they're constructed and zoned properly, really become economic engines for a city, because they are where naturally a lot of businesses want to locate, and that's where your employment runs. So we could look no further than Scottsdale, really, to see the benefit of their airport and what happened with the growth just exploding in the 90s because of the construction of the freeway loop out there. So we have the benefit of having the loop here nearby our airport. Accelerating this particular piece will ensure that we have solid economic development to develop of jobs, but also it will help with the acceleration of moving the expanding the airport terminals and moving them over to the east side ultimately, which is where it was planned to be. So I would be in support of this as well, wholeheartedly.
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 Thank you.
Do you have a heart?
No, that's true.
And to follow with what Councilman Kavanaugh said, once again, this is sort of a Mesa creation because of the Red Mountain Freeway. And we can talk about what's occurred since we were able to accelerate the Red Mountain, which set in motion sort of a domino effect, which caused ADOT to accelerate other portions of the 202 because of the natural progression of construction, which completed the loop, which made possible things such as Gaylord. Gaylord would not be on the table but for the freeway. I believe that many of the other things, the Cessnas and that, probably would not be on the table without the freeway system being completed where it is now. So these, we can see some of the tangible results and effects of how aggressive construction these transportation items really do create net benefits. Okay, do we have any... today, once again, our formal action will be when the actual agreement between the entities come forward. This morning, what I believe Mr. Butler and the staff needed was a sense of the council that gave our support to this process moving forward, so we can communicate that both to MAG and to ADOT going forward. Do we have any other comments or questions? Do we have any issues or questions from any other members of the council as far as supporting that instruction to the staff? Okay.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and move forward. Thank you. The next item on the agenda, item number two, is to hear a presentation and discuss construction and timing of fire projects related to the recently passed bond election.
Yeah, it is. Good morning. Good morning, Mayor, Council. How are you this morning? We're here and we're excited to be here because we have some nice projects coming up as a result of our November bond election that passed. And so this morning we're going to start with the fire stations projects, and Ryan is going to talk to you a little bit about past bonds and the financial bonds for this. And Chief will visit with you a little bit about the program, and I'll cover the bricks and mortar part of the presentation.
Thank you, Beth. Mayor, Council, really wanted to kind of give you a background of where we are currently in our fire bond program. Prior to the success of the 2008 public safety question, our question, or ballot question before that, was in 2004. There was a fire bond question. $9.69 million in 2004 went to the election, and it was successful. From that election, we have sold about $4.7 million worth of bonds in three periods, spring of 2005, 2007, and most recently in 2008. There's currently an unsold balance of available fire bonds sitting out there that we have decided not to utilize at this point, but really the predominant use for those, or the identified initial use for those, was for the construction of the Fire Operations Center. That was its original designation, but we have put that project on hold and as well put the balance of these funds, we've left them unsold. What we decided to do, though, instead was proceed with the November 2008 election, combined with police in a public safety vote. That vote was for approximately $58.3 million in combination with police and fire, and both their bricks and mortar needs, as Beth identified, as well as much of their communications needs for the next two-year period. Did want to talk to you a little bit about what we've historically used these bonds for and really what we've used the bonds for since the 2004 election. The majority of it has been to purchase replacement fire equipment, both ladder and pumper trucks. We use bonds to do that. It is the only vehicles that we purchase with bonds outside of police helicopters. We typically only purchase brick and mortar projects with this, but due to the cost as well as the long life that we experience with our fire trucks, we think it's a prudent move to utilize bonds to do that. We retire the fire truck portion of all bond sale debt first prior to any other debt that we retire in order to keep it in line with the anticipated life of those vehicles. We've also used the money to acquire future substation sites or fire station sites. We've installed Opticom systems at various intersections, and that's the signal preemption system that fire trucks use to get green lights when they approach signalized intersections to advance their progress more quickly to the scene. We did do some initial work on our fire operations center. A very small amount of the sold bonds from the 2004 election have been used to do some prior fire operations center work. But the majority of that is, again, is being held as unsold bonds. And then most notably, one of the things we did do last year was we moved forward with the advanced design on Station 215 and as well as the new 218 and the 219 prototype design. We moved forward with that in order to be able to be, if we were successful with the 2008 election, we could now quickly move and start construction of those projects. If we wouldn't have moved forward with the design last year, we'd now just see ourselves starting design after successful approval of those bonds in this past November. So that gave us a significant head start and gave Beth's group a significant head start, as well as the fire group, to get those planned and get them moving forward. So, again, that's a little bit of our history, where we're at. And happy to answer any questions or really let the chief move forward.
Mayor, members of the council, as you know, fire service is very dependent upon facilities and equipment. The largest portion of being able to acquire the stations and equipment is obviously through the bond program. And as Brian mentioned, we have basically not had any activity with regard to fire station construction in a number of years for several reasons. Those facilities and equipment are extremely important, as you would imagine, to the delivery of fire and EMS service in the community. Just some key points to consider that obviously one of the reasons that we work so hard at acquiring fire stations is that we want to be able to strategically locate our resources for a 24/7 response into the community that provides effective response times throughout the city. Obviously, as we've mentioned in other presentations, when we're having to cover long distances or cover areas of the city with a second due unit, response times are typically elongated. We also want to establish and improve a sense of security through a public safety presence. I think when fire stations show up in neighborhoods, many times people feel like they can identify with that fire station, that there is public safety right there and available if they should need it. So I think that's a huge advantage to the quality of life in our community. It also helps to find neighborhood identity as part of the city. A lot of times, as you would imagine, we build fire stations typically based on growth. Many times people that are annexed in on the periphery of the city like that feel a little bit like they're on an outland area where they're kind of distant. So bringing them in makes them understand that they are an important part of the city of Mesa, and we value them as our citizens. Finally, we try to provide facilities that are consistent with the aesthetics of the neighborhood. It's always been our goal to be sure that not only do we look like
a full and equal partner within the community, but actually bring some additional value to that particular neighborhood through the quality of construction that we provide. And then finally, we address future and current needs. I should say not only current needs, but future needs as well, as we plan and purchase property and design stations and prototype arrangements so that we can get quick construction. So that's the basis of the needs for bond funds for fire service in our community. If there's any questions, and I'll turn it over to Beth.
Okay, thank you, Chief. The next slide gives you an overview of where we currently have stations, as well as where the three stations that were programmed in the 2008 bond election are located. As Brian mentioned, we did start design in the prior year. So Station 218 at Alma School and 8th Street, Station 215, replacement station for Phoenix Mesa Gateway, and then a new station, 219, at Signal Butte and Elliott. We did start design of 218 and 215, and as a result of that, we're currently in plan review and ready to go out to construction very quickly. And we are starting design of 219 now. I'm just showing in the upper corner the dollars that were included in the bond election for the programs for building and constructing stations. And I'll start with Fire Station 218.
Excuse me, Beth, one, just real quick. We see where 219 is. Just general area, where would the next two sites, where are those planned for? What general areas?
Mayor, are you talking what would essentially be Station 220 and 221?
20 and 21.
Well, it's still to be determined as we evaluate essentially our response patterns and call volumes. We are looking at least two or three more years before we'd be looking at actually building those stations. But in general, we do have a hole essentially in our current coverage at about 56th and Main.
Okay, so the east side.
So pretty much the east side. The west side with the construction of 218, we should be fairly set for the foreseeable future.
Okay.
And Mayor, to the Chief, one of the things we're having to do is evaluate under our new service model, too, right, how that might affect the distribution of fire stations.
And even
also
the type of fire station.
Well, all those have to be considered.
Okay. Thank you.
So we'll start with 218. Currently, they're co-located with Station 203, that you see here in the picture. 218 is at about 8th Street in Alma School. If you notice, this is the site and the location that will be. This is a view of the site, and I put this up so you can see how it's set up right now. We do have the advantage of already having a six-lane arterial adjacent to it and utilities and a reasonably nice site to build on. We will be making some adjustments to 9th Street, as you'll see in later slides, to make it a bit cleaner in here in terms of traffic. We will be cul-de-sacking 9th Street and to kind of avoid at least another conflict with some of the driveways in and out of the fire station site.
Beth, while you're here, why don't you go through that specifically as far as one of the things, the consideration working with the neighborhoods is we didn't want fire trucks coming out onto 9th Street.
Exactly.
So then talk about this, and it's not quite maybe as obvious, but from this photo that, what you would call it?
Offset
of those roads and what impact that has on the function of the flow of the trucks coming out.
We did present a number of alternatives to the neighborhood on how to get fire trucks out onto Alma School Road and out to meet the response times. One of them was to take it out onto 9th Street, which would have impacted the neighborhood in that area. The others were another one was to take it out on Alma School, which is the choice that we have made. The two streets are slightly offset, and then we will be adding two driveways for the fire station, which you can see. I'll come back. There. You can see the two driveways on the fire station and the cul-de-sac. With this, by cul-de-sacking 9th Street, we minimize some of the traffic and some of the conflicts that can occur between the 9th Street connections and the driveways to the fire station. So it cleans that up a bit in there and makes it easier. It's much nicer than pulling those fire trucks out onto 9th Street where we have homes right adjacent to them. So,
in the cul-de-sac, we've vetted that out with the neighborhood.
Yes.
They seem to be in favor of that.
The series of neighborhood meetings. So I'm going to back up.
Councilmember, I'm just going to chime in.
the staff and the neighborhood have been, I mean, we've been meeting on this for, what, a year or a year and a half, and it's, they've been fantastic. They've listened to the neighborhood. They've responded to everything from design questions to access to which parcel we preferred to acquire in the first place. And so I just wanted to really thank city staff for rolling up their sleeves and really listening and responding to what the neighborhood was asking.
Thank you. I'm going to do a little bit of a, just to show the architecture and the site. We've been having a little technical difficulty with this morning, so if I can't. But basically, this is the architecture for the site, and I can provide you with more detail if you'd like. I can't quite get my little fly around to work this morning.
Sorry. So. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, if you could, because those are great pictures of trees.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
The landscape is awesome.
It's really a nice visual to use, so I'll bring it back when I can get it to actually run on this computer. Okay, so and here's the site again. This is the floor plan for 218. You can see the various facilities and the square footage of the building and the apparatus bays that we're installing associated with the floor. Cost estimate.
There. Go ahead. The floor plan you have, to what extent have these plans been, are they done? Are they construction ready?
They are at 90% construction ready. Where we are right now is we are in building code review. And we will wait till we get through building code review and then we will go to bid.
Okay, so at 90%, we're pretty much at what do you put on the walls and whatever. But where the slide poles go and all that is already done.
There are no slide poles.
Good.
Sorry.
I hate those things. They hurt. Okay.
Councilmember Higgins.
Is this built for one? This is built for more than one crew, obviously. How many crews is this built for?
Councilmember Higgins, it essentially is established for two crews. Okay. With apparatus availability for us to have flexibility in what types of equipment we actually deploy on calls, in addition to potentially storing, if you will, reserve apparatus that are functional, but in the area where they could be utilized on short notice.
So two crews means there's room for eight individuals, 24-hour capacity in the building.
That's correct.
Great, thanks.
Okay, we'll get to the cost now. This is a cost summary for the project. As Brian mentioned, the engineering costs for this project were out of the prior bond authorization. The remaining will come out of the 2008 bond authorization. And one of the things I'm going to stress today is that we have a very low economy right now, but we also have a very competitive construction market. As staff, we're anxious to get these out on the street as quickly as we can to try and conserve more of our bond dollars as possible. We are getting really good prices right now in construction projects, and so we're anxious to get it out and get it moving. And we hope to kind of best these prices once we get out on the street. If we move then to 219.
Councilmember Higgins has a question.
Just quickie. So what is that per square foot? I mean, I don't have, it's early.
Well, I think we have it in here right now at about $288 a square foot, roughly. We believe that we can get it a little bit better than that. 3 years ago, we would have probably been telling you it was over $300 a square foot, but we are seeing substantial reductions in construction cost in today's market.
Okay, thanks.
And I guess I should mention that includes typically site work, so not just the building. So. Fire Station 219, this is the way it looks today. We have a picture of a lovely sign. This is the location. For those of you who have been out in this area, we are currently constructing the first phase of the water treatment plant on the northeast corner of Signal Butte and Elliott. The fire station would be located to the north of that. The city does own all of this property in this area, in this next to the water plant. We hope to put the water plant online here in the next month, the first phase of it. The fire station will go further north. There are a number of challenges on this site. If you look at the 8th Street and Alma School site, again, we had an arterial street there. We had a storm drain system. We had utilities available. We had a lot of stuff there and a relatively flat site with not a lot of worries about storm drain and subsurface soils conditions. This site is not so. This site, that is a major wash crossing between the plant and the fire station. It crosses Signal Butte. We have an undeveloped arterial street, which is currently at a lower elevation than what we will have to be at to locate a fire station in here and be above floodplains and those sorts of things that occur. So we will be, as a, under a separate project, we'll be reconstructing half of Signal Butte Road and installing a major box to get this wash under the road and bring the road up to where it's an all-weather road for fire station response time. So we have some challenges on the site that are different. We will be using the prototype floor plans from 218 and moving them to the site, but we do have to take into account some of the unusual site conditions we have here. We will have coordination with the flood control department to build on the site. We will be going back probably through the design review board process for the architecture for the area. And so there will be some activities associated with this, even with the prototype floor plan. So,
yeah. Councilmember Finter?
As the city looks at acquiring sites and making these purchases, do they confer pretty regularly with engineering?
Yes, they do. Actually, we're starting to look now for fire station sites, and one of the things we're doing is real estate identifies them, is we actually pull out our prototype floor plan and put them on them to see that it fits and how it would work. But yes.
The question, sorry to interrupt you, the question that comes to mind with such site challenges that you have and the costs that are associated with that, it almost seems like sometimes you would want to look for a site that would be less impactful as far as site development.
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Finter, I agree with you, except that most of our new stations need to go on the east side of town, out in the southeast part of the area or the northeast part of the area. And there are many sites out there that just do not have the same facilities that you find on the more developed western portions of the city, like 8th Street and Alma School. So many of the sites we're looking at today still have challenges.
And Mayor, Councilman Finter, the improvements we're talking about, we would have to do regardless. I mean, we're doing it maybe a little sooner because we're building the fire station out there, but those improvements as far as the road and the storm sewer would have been our responsibility at some point in the future with development that's taking place out there. So,
Councilmember Summers?
And I would say that I would assume we probably acquired the site nearly a decade ago, if not more, and the cost was pretty cheap at the time, and the reason being is there is no infrastructure, there is no road. But what you see a little bit on this map, and I'd say that this map is actually kind of dated, is the growth that's occurring out here. To the south of this, there are a tremendous number of homes that have developed out. I think there's a good 3.5 square miles of homes that, for this particular fire station, are not covered very well. We did just recently add another fire truck up to 217, and that's going to help with some response times, but not as much as getting this done. Beth, I do have a question on to the south. It's a little amusing because we have some infrastructure problems, and yet this thing is set between a power station and a water treatment plant. So I just want to bust out laughing.
Yeah.
But the water treatment plant has a significant amount of property that's undeveloped. Yes. On the south side along Elliott Road.
Yes.
And Elliott Road, for the most part, is improved. Is there any way we can shift this fire station onto Elliott Road without delaying the amount of time it would take to get this open and utilize this particular parcel for expansion of the water treatment plant or SRP or?
That's always a possibility. I do know that we've programmed much of the frontage along Elliott for the water plant and access to and from the water plant. So I'd have to go back and see how that would work with the access. And
what was the relation, what was purchased first, the fire site or the water, or the water campus?
The water campus.
I believe all of this was purchased with utility bonds initially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we realized that we probably, you know, we've had to work with SRP on the site.
Yes, we did.
And the storm, so this
which,
has been
which a, site?
The same site right above this. See, the SRP is developing their.
Right.
Was it a
right.
substation?
It's if you look to the north, that's actually the Browning Receiving Station. That's
right.
One of six major facilities for the Salt River.
So, what is what property in there does the city actually own?
The
entire parcel.
Yeah, just to the south side of the receiving station, that fence right there, there's an easement, a major easement for power lines to cross, and then beginning right there all the way to Elliott, and then to the east. To the lineup with the Browning substation through there. So
that diagonal
virtually,
line?
I believe so. Yeah.
So area to the east of the water treatment plant. We all, we own all that frontage along Ellsworth also.
Yes.
Any thought as to whether we put it on the water plant or put it to the east of that?
We do have some challenges on the east as well. The diagonal line you just referred to, that's called WAPA. That is a major electrical transmission corridor through there, and it's very wide. So I would have to go back and probably work with Salt River Project on that. We did kind of lay the site out with Salt River Project in terms of the WAPA easements and then the Browning substation on the north so that we interfaced with them as well as possible for...
How much to scale is this map? I mean, the orange part, is that the physical or does the water treatment go clear to the...
Yeah, you are correct. This is not really to scale. It's more visual in nature. So the water plant will extend further east. The fire station site's probably a little smaller than what's shown.
Okay. So we don't, you know, this gives the false illusion that there's somehow some unutilized land along Elliott between what is shown as the boundary of the water plant to the power easement on the east side. Right. What you're saying is that that's really not an accurate
portrayal,
illustration.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But
yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
I just wondered when you say road improvements, what do you mean by road improvements on Signal Butte? The whole mile or four lanes?
Right now, we're in the middle of scoping that project. Certainly from Elliott to the south edge of Browning, and then we would probably look to go along the Browning substation as well. We would be looking at the half street. Our frontage, the same as we would require of a developer, and we would, but in terms of the wash, you can't just build half of a box. You have to build the entire box across the wash to get the water through. So that's what we're currently looking at. We have looked at the Elliott frontage. However, we have some major utility improvements still to go in that frontage. We have a sizable raw water line that needs to come through there from the CAP canal to the east. And so we are going to hold Elliott for a little bit until some of those utilities are put in place.
Yeah. If the Elliott will be under a tremendous amount of construction.
Yes, it will.
One, to get the utilities in, and two, part of our agreement with D&B is for them to complete portions of Elliott also, and we're going
to
contribute it. So this whole area, this is the right time to be going in and making these improvements because a lot of reconstruction and construction is going to take place in these right-of-ways.
Councilmember Summers?
I was considering what the mayor said there, too, is this, and I had alluded to, that this map isn't quite accurate because a lot of that infrastructure is already there. The water, not only are the houses there, but the water treatment
is
also there, too, but there's still land that would be available along Elliott. All I'm interested is to make sure that we can get the best value, but moving this project forward, there's significant cost savings to be had by moving these capital projects forward right now because the private contractors are in need of work. We're in need of a fire station, and so we actually are going to see some cost savings of this, not just and plus public safety improvements. So I don't want to give the appearance that I want to delay this. If there is a way to shift the site that works better, that we can utilize city land, and we can do that concurrently as we move through this, that would be interesting. But again, too, we're going to have to make these improvements to
Signal Butte.
There's just too many roads now. Mm-hmm. Signal Butte Road at some point, and so maybe doing all that really ends up to be a benefit. Thanks,
Councilmember Fenter.
Thanks. And my purpose was not to second-guess any decisions that have been made. Generally, and I've asked this in the past, is what seemed like a successful model was we would purchase fire station sites next to retention basins or other publicly or city-owned properties, and there seemed to be some savings along those lines. And so purchasing these standalones, you think about Adobe and North University, and some of those just haven't seemed to work out real well. We're now going to have to, I would just hope as a general policy that we would try to utilize or connect or bring together multiple sites if we could to have some cost savings. That's where I was coming from.
Mayor, just if I could, just for the record, we did master plan this this area about 4 years ago, and there is a minimal amount of land on the east side. We tried to take the configuration for the fire stations, and it simply wouldn't fit. And as Beth said, there's a lot of topographical challenges with this, with and not only that, but the easements with WAPA also. So we did look at it. There is a possibility long-term for a small structure on the east side that if the city needed for any reason, but it was clear to us after we master planned it that the space left that could accommodate the amount of acreage needed for a fire station would be in the northwest corner.
Councilmember Higgins?
Is it really necessary to go through design review and the whole process over when you've had an acceptable building to construct in the city? To me, it seems kind of
One of the things we're talking about right now is if we can shorten that process, and we'll be visiting with planning and development services in that regard. So it's something we're looking at, but today I have to consider it and allot some time in the event we need to do it. So,
Councilmember Summers?
We want to honor that, Dina, that process, make sure that the fire station fits in the neighborhood, because I'd hate for the power lines or the water treatment plant to get upset about a bad design.
Yes, make it shorter.
And continuing on.
All right, so just to summarize, 219, we are going to use the 218 prototype floor plan. We do have about $4.5 million to build the station. We will
Beth,
be...
I hate to get picky. The $4.5 million on the front page...
Yeah, I know.
We showed $5.2 million.
That's for equipment and other...
Okay.
There's some equipment affiliated with
so
the station.
So this is for the actual construction
of the station.
That includes fully out the door.
Yeah. Yes.
And just so you know, since with the redeployment, things like that, we're hoping to be able to save on that $5.2 because we're not going to do a turnkey brand new equipment, because we are redeploying equipment as part of the
there'll be some savings over on the whole system
overall.
Yeah,
right.
How we replace things.
All right.
And we will be beginning a project for single beam fire station 215. This is the current 215 that is located very close to the existing terminal right now that we will be replacing. It is an older building, and we are a leasee, a tenant here in this site. We look at the airport. We will be moving to the south in the lower quadrant of the airport site. And if you want a little bigger blow up of that, we'll be off of Cargo and Velocity Way, so that the airport response team will access directly onto the runways to the kind of the northeast. And the community response teams will respond to the southwest, ultimately off of Verona. We're working with the airport. They do have lease agreements in that area for future developments, and they'll be constructing that road as part of those projects. The fire station will probably be there first. So this is the site. This is the floor plan. Again, you can see that there are response bays for the city service, and they go out to the left to Sossaman Road, and the airport response bays to the runways. This is a larger facility. It is a shared police and fire facility at the airport, so there's space for both. And it's larger because we include the airport response facilities as well. It is two stories with a small little observation deck on top. That's the elevation. You can see the north and the south elevations. This right here is the small little observation deck that we need that overlooks the runways. We currently have one of those in the existing 215. There will be one in the new 215. It's pretty basic type observation deck with a place for data ports and ability to have communication equipment, that type of thing, in the event of an emergency. But we did go with kind of the airport theme on the architecture. You can see it's designed to blend into the airport. First floor plan with the bays and the rooms for the basic space. The dorms and the living room space is basically upstairs on the second floor, on a smaller floor than the first floor. And what we call the third floor, which is the observation deck. So those are the three floor plans for the building.
Just a quick question. Because you have a second floor, there's an elevator there, right? Is there an elevator required for?
There is an ADA requirement.
And I just wanted to point out some of these silly things because this is that.
We have an ADA requirement to put in an elevator so a firefighter who is disabled can get to the third floor?
Yes.
I understand. To the second floor.
Nobody said it had to make sense.
We do have some requirements that we have to meet that are federal requirements.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of those things that it's always fun to point out. Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Fenter.
Yes. On the it says ARF bays there on the one side of the map. The other side says city service bays. I presume those are for structural firefighter units. They're going back into
right.
the city.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks.
Or to the terminal.
Yeah, I think that's maybe something. This, like you said, both serves the area from a regular firefighting service and serves the airport with the specialized firefighting equipment for the airport, which a lot of that is in addition to our wonderful ADA type things, which tend to make a lot of sense, are defined by FAA requirements as far as the type of equipment and many of the design features and response features and, for example, observation. A lot of those are required by FAA as part of airport, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Councilmember Richens.
Who pays for the airport side? I mean, is there any costs? Do we absorb all the costs for the airport firefighting section of this, the ARF side?
Equipment.
Or are there shared costs
there
with the airport authority?
Yes.
Okay, so the airport authority kicks in.
They help out, for example, with the equipment. I know we've had more conversations about their contributions and how they offset on the operating costs, both for police and fire. And those discussions continue because those services, especially even more on the police side, with more passenger traffic going through their discussions with the airport authority about their contributions to offset some of that cost, too.
And thank you. If the police are serviced out of here, we move the terminal to the other side of the airport, what are our police needs going to be at that point?
You know, that we'll have to evaluate both for police and fire again on the other side, on the east side. But remember, we still have an ASU campus. We'll still have major tenants with Embraer, Cessna. So we really believe that even though there is the long-term plans to move the terminals to the east side, there'll still be a tremendous amount of activity on this west side of the airport with the campus and all the other tenants.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins.
This is a three-crew station, right? The last station we looked at could hold two crews, which is eight people. How many firefighters are here at a regular time, on a regular basis?
I believe there's six. Councilmember Higgins, I believe there are six. Two are dedicated to remain on site and available for aircraft response, and the other four run both on the airport as necessary and off the airport into the ASU area and the neighborhoods and the industry that's in that area. So
there's six crews, so that's 24 firefighters.
Approximately.
Okay, thanks.
Plus the police offices.
Councilmember Summers.
I'll make one comment here too, Chief, and you may want to chime in from what Dave was saying. He has legitimate concerns is, will this fire station adequately, out in the future, will this be a necessity as we move operations of passenger traffic to the airport? Not only will we also have the Cessnas and some other activities on this airport, the FAA regulates response times on airport, and you have to be able to reach all portions of the airport ends of the runways within 3 minutes. It's unlikely in the not too distant future that this airport will have to be serviced by two fire stations, one on the east side because the runway close to this fire station is going to be the longest of the runways. So we'll have response times. So this fire station will deal with that. Plus the ASU Polytechnic Campus, CGCC, and a lot of other issues, aviation off airport. And then on the other side of the airport, we'll probably have a similar station, probably smaller, that will have to service off airport for fire protection along the south side gym proving ground and to cover that FAA required response times on the third runway, because we do have that third runway. That sound about right?
That's correct. And in the little more distant future, depending on the index rating for the airport and the capacity of the airport, and as you know, our plan is that becomes a rather large full-service airport for our community, we will need to upstaff and at some point probably have dedicated resources there to respond just based on the index of the airport. So I'm not just talking about two people. I'm talking about, but there'd be an increased requirement for response. But right now, essentially, we treat the airport as an entity like we would any other business in our community, and our fire crews run both onto the airport for aircraft firefighting, as well as they do first aid and everything else. So when we have an alert at the airport, we send the entire station out on that call, not just the two people, because clearly two people and two trucks cannot handle a major aircraft incident. So we're working together through that process, but I believe at some point we will need to take a look at it, and especially when we get to the point where we're looking at building out the east side where the main terminal is going to end up.
And even though the living quarters are on the second floor, I don't see a pole in here.
There is a pole in this one.
There's a pole?
There's two.
Wow.
Here you go.
Here's one.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
In case the elevator's too slow.
In case the elevator, in case the disabled firefighter can't use the elevator. Okay. You got the pole. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
And those poles are designed to ADA and OSHA standards, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
I am leading this along.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Yes,
So we're not going to start off with four service crews out of this airport. We're starting off with one or two.
We have three aircraft response vehicles.
Okay.
And one fire engine company that responds both on and off the airport.
But like, when we open this facility, we're still going to have that same thing, one fire crew that goes on and off airport?
That's correct.
Okay, because I just thought with one, two, three service bays that you were having more crews in here. Not right now. Not to
not
start.
Right now.
Okay,
sorry.
Great.
Yeah,
thanks.
We're not changing the staff.
Okay.
Okay. We're ready, right? Okay, our cost summary here for this project. Again, the engineering costs were out of the 2004 bond program, and the remainder of the costs will be paid for out of the 2008 bond program. Looking at our schedules,
Councilmember Richens has a question.
Oh, sorry.
Is that the complete cost of the station without the factoring in the airport share and everything? That's just
the
total share. It's the total cost.
There's no thank you.
So, okay, looking at the bond schedules, as I said, we have 218 and 215 essentially ready to go. They're in the code review process. We are looking to have those out for bids March, April, and into award to you and start construction early summer. So for both those stations, kind of June, July timeframes, you'll be seeing those contracts. And then moving on to 219, we did pull this project up. We did bring it forward about 6 months above our prior schedules that we had. It will still be built in the same fiscal year, just earlier in the fiscal year. So you'll see that we have initiated design. I expect to have an initial site layout on the 20th, which I believe is next week. And we'll be moving into the design contract at that point, utilizing the same architect we used for 218 to save some time and money and use the prototype plans. We do have to make it fit this site. We do have some design issues to consider.
Councilmember Richens?
What is GMP award?
One of the things we've done is we will be bidding 218, which is very similar to 219, so we're going to low bid 218. To pull up the schedules on 219, we've gone with the alternative delivery construction manager at risk type contract, where we put the contractor on board now, and we will be using 218 as a basis to negotiate the other fire stations because we'll have that as a low bid cost. But it does allow us to save some time in the process to get these out. We are working very hard to get these stations built within the 2-year bond timeframe from last November. So you'll see all of these schedules kind of trying to culminate by the fall of 2010 for a couple of reasons. One is to use the current economy and the conditions we have for bidding and get some work out on the streets for the contractors who are in to see me very frequently today, as well as to get these in as soon as we can, because I think we all recognize that we need these stations, and it behooves us to get them in as soon as we can. So we are using alternative delivery on those, and a GMP is called a guaranteed maximum price.
Councilmember Summers?
That's a long explanation.
Why two separate bidding processes? The station is identical. So is it because of the road and the box and the and a lot of the other things? Or why can't
it's
the
site.
The site itself. The site work that's going to have to be done before you put the building down.
Right.
We can't open the bids at the same time and maybe try to... No. They're going to have to do the other...
They've got to go through the process. We have to go through the structural design in particular. We do have, every time you move sites, you've got different subsurface conditions than you had at the last
site. The soils are different. And you see the drainage may be very different. So the footings and all that engineering has to be done from site.
While the programming's done and the floor plans are done, we do have to go through the engineering process, and I would not recommend short-circuiting that. I think we'd pay a premium if we try to do that. We'd end up with change orders on the project and significant after-the-fact costs that cost us a premium.
Really wouldn't cost us anything until the station started sinking.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and then you'd all be looking at me.
Councilmember Higgins, do you have a comment?
Yeah. I just wondered where our dotted line is for our station 220 on this plan.
Well,
okay, next question.
Well, as you know, we're all aware we need some additional stations, and we've had many conversations with Chris and Fire. We know we need to get these projects done. We are bolting ahead as quickly as we can to do that, to get more out of this program and squeeze every dollar we can out of the program, and that's where we're headed. We do have money in the program to acquire two sites and to design two sites.
Great, but we do not have the money currently in the program until we see how all these to construct another station at this time.
And I think if you look at the schedule, if everything goes well and we get on down these tracks the way we are currently planning today, we should know by late this year, after we have the final cost on 219, about where we are budget-wise, and take a look then to see what we have left and what we can go forward.
I would love to see, you know how they have that little thermometer when you have fundraisers? I'd like to see the Station 220 and remember that with every dollar we save, it's going in that thermometer to 220. Wouldn't that be good? That'd be fun.
That would be good.
Visual.
Richens.
I could start talking with the other fire presentations on response time in the area, Mayor, yeah. But we won't go there today.
Sorry, Dina, were you done? I just wanted to make one more comment about Station 218. In the initial designs, there was a pretty good-sized community room designed in that room. And as the neighborhood met with Fire, I think the neighborhood really recognized the city's financial situations. And the neighborhood actually recommend shrinking those community rooms down to not be so big. We felt we had an abundance of meeting space available to us in West Mesa. We really didn't need it in Fire, so it got shrunk down to a point. Really, you guys need that space for training.
That's correct.
Of firefighters and other things that happen at those fire stations outside of just having community meetings. And so I just wanted to appreciate the give and take there, that the community recognized that we needed to get as much value out of these stations as we could, and that we had other facilities in the community. And I don't know what the net cost savings that may have been for us on that, but I wanted to again reiterate how much I appreciated the good work you guys did with the neighborhood to really address a set of complex issues. I think we really got to see how tough infill development is in a neighborhood, and people persevered and have met diligently with the adjacent property owners in the surrounding neighborhood. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Question.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
We appreciate your time this morning.
Okay, the next item on the agenda, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the sale of city-owned property located on the southeast corner of Higley and Red Mountain Freeway, Loop 202.
We have to be there at 10.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. I've laid at your station some photographs and a council report that was dated January 12th. I'd like to spend 4 or 5 minutes, if I may, Mayor, to get a little bit of background on this property. In 1984, through an IGA with the City of Mesa and Arizona Department of Transportation, we were asked to acquire some properties for the Advance part of the freeway, the 202. At that time, we purchased two properties for a total cost of about $157,000. In 2002, ADOT came to us as they were expanding the freeway into Mesa, and they purchased, if I can just zoom in on this, you can see it. This is the, for the viewers at home and in the audience, this is the area up there at Higley and the 202. This is what we purchased back in 1984. When ADOT was expanding the freeway, they came in and they purchased what you see there in highlighted in yellow as part of their freeway right-of-way. Around 2005, with real estate and the council and through the city manager's office, we prepared a long list of city-owned property that was determined or hoped to be determined to be excess property. And this was one of the ones that was on this long list. It came up to about the fall of 2006 when it was determined that the city facilities was no longer or was not needed on this property. And it was determined to be excess property. And at the direction of the city manager's office, we put this property on the market for sale. And in doing so, part of our due diligence, we came across the access of this property off of Higley Road wasn't adequate. And so we went back to ADOT and we purchased this small triangle you see right here for $4,000. This triangle shape was the majority of the slope that came off of Higley Road. In February 2007, the property was listed with C.B. Richard Ellis. At a price of $7.50 a square foot. During that spring, we had a couple of offers, and pretty much the subject always came up about the property to the northwest of our property. And that's identified right here. You see that little triangle to the northwest of the property? That is owned by ADOT. And so in the summer, through the city manager's office, we took this property off the market and tried to work with ADOT to combine both our properties and theirs to list it to be placed on the market. It took almost a year for ADOT to come back, and the answer was that ADOT could not sell it at that time because there was a reverter clause when they purchased the property from the previous owners, and the previous owners who were contacted would have liked to exercise their right to purchase the property back. So we ended our discussions with ADOT at that time, and we put the property back on the market. And this is their flyer. The property was placed back on the market. During this time, we had a few letters of intent and a few offers. The current prospective purchaser or buyer actually put an offer in when the property first came on the market in the spring of 2007. We didn't so much deny all offers. We just didn't act on them because we wanted to see if we could work something out with ADOT. In July of 2007, when the property went back on the market, we had an appraisal done, which came in at $6.88 a square foot. At the same time, this purchaser presented another offer at $6.50. At that time, we told him that we would not accept any of the offers for 30 to 60 days because the property was off the market for about a year, and we wanted to see what else the market was going to bear. C.B. Richard Ellis, in addition to placing the sign on the property, they used the services of real estate services called LoopNet, which is a 3 million registered member real estate service site with a monthly visitor to this site of almost a million of developers and agents, investors. They also use a service called CoStar, which is current, has current listing over a million different properties throughout the United States and in Europe. Locally, they said that they sent flyers and personally visited over 300 local brokers, in addition to their own C.B. Richard Ellis's national website that has 2,800 brokers nationwide. The prospective purchaser on this property wants to construct what he calls a big boy toy storage facility. These are indoor storage units for high-end RVs, boats, that type of thing. They would be purchased, they would be available for sale, and my understanding is they're going to be all enclosed indoors. Although we have not seen a site plan, his contract and agreement, which we have had reviewed by the city attorney's office, he has actually signed and awaiting council's authority to move forward on this, if so be. He will have a 180-day feasibility period. After that, his $50,000 earnest money will go hard if he wants to continue on with the agreement, and he will have another 180-day to close. There's a question on the ownership, the surrounding ownership of the property. Directly to the northwest, it is ADOT. To the south is Sunshine Acres, and to the east is Sunshine Acres. In talking with Sunshine Acres, I understand that they have no desire at this time to sell their property. They are in a long-term plan to continue to develop the property for their purposes. I've given you some photographs with some numbers on them and showing different directions that we took the photographs on. I was asked to show additional photograph of the berm. This is the berm as you leave the intersection of Higley and the 202 going eastbound onto the freeway. The berm is on the right-hand side, and the property that we own is over over the berm. And this is from standing on the city property looking toward the north, and there's the berm there.
So, Craig, this property is situated so that it faces the freeway, but does and it, while it has access to Higley, how tall do you think that berm is? What would you the berm that goes across along the side of the property
from,
line?
From the inside?
Yeah. Because the issue about exposure to the freeway, I mean, you look at the poles on 2, I don't know if you can tell what that is. It's fairly significant, I guess, is my point.
Mayor, could I just interject here for a sec? Where we're looking at those poles are the ADOT property. If you look on your first page that is like this. So if you look on the sheet that is titled, looks like this. Okay? So those poles are actually on the ADOT property. And this picture is taken standing in that little section that comes off of Higley, which is a little deceiving because if you actually stood on our property, you wouldn't have that view. So our property is actually further east. So let's see if we have a better picture from that view.
Is the picture two taken from our property?
Taken from our property.
Yeah, in the L shape that comes
the L
off
shape
Higley.
Off
but it's from our property.
This is at the bottom of the slope.
I guess
off
what the issue
freeway.
Is the berm and the depression of the freeway, whatever happens on this property, unless it's multiple story, is shielded?
And Mayor, that's my point. It's a misnomer by looking at these pictures because when you stand in the center of this property, you actually have freeway visibility both east and west direction. You're on the corner. I mean, when you stand in the middle of our big square.
On the on-ramps.
No, or you can't. The on-ramps, not so good, okay? But when you stand in the middle of this property, you can see cars, and cars can see you both directions. So this is almost at grade when you go to the northeast of this property.
Further west and...
No, further north and east. But as you go right south and west, when you're down in this little L,
yes,
not so good visibility.
And it is visible. I can see from one of the picture number 4. There's a car up there that it's clearly visible from the freeway or from the Higley Road intersection.
But actually even have better visibility from the eastbound traffic of this whole site and actually the westbound on the 202. But from this one picture, again, you're actually overlooking what I would say would be the entrance to this property and you're staring at the ADOT property, which is actually depressed in that corner.
Okay.
So as you move east on the property and north closer to the free, the, you know, the majority or the big square portion you laid out is actually has great freeway visibility.
What's this pretty, what is this prop, and I'm sorry, I may have read it somewhere. What's in the general plan?
R190.
It's currently zoned R190.
Currently zoned R190.
Mayor, the general plan designation is general park, as business park.
Business park.
Right. Current zoning is R190.
Yeah. Yeah. We know we're not going to put R19 in there.
No. Yeah, no, this is a direct flight path for Falcon Field. So that's another
Boeing,
concern we have.
It's a Boeing concern.
So, well, it's Falcon Field, the Falcon Field director is very concerned about
so,
residential
so
development.
So whether it's visible or not, I mean, I'm trying to think the reason for that. Would we sell it if it were further down in the hole and not if it were at level or?
Yep, Mayor, add to this?
Please do.
Would we sell it if it's further down in a hole? I mean, maybe for this purpose, if it had total no visibility at all, you might say, yeah, there's not a whole lot of it. But in reality, you've got freeway visibility. You could put a
but
really
isn't
nice.
Isn't that part of the design function? And can't we mitigate that through the design function? Whatever the use is, I'm forgetting what the use is because I think we're, and I don't know. To me, we're almost entering a slippery slope when we start mixing zoning and land use from land sale decisions. I mean, I understand that at the end of the day, you can't separate those two, but it seems to me like those are two separate processes. And if we're going to sell land, we should sell it based on a financial need and on a land, the city land use need, and let the land designation and design review process take care of the other thing. I mean, am I missing something? I guess maybe that's oversimplistic. Now, obviously, if someone wanted to come in and do something that was so out of whack with the projected or the designated land use, would say, hey, that's not going to work. But it seems to me like this might be, at least, would this use be consistent with the general plan designation?
Not at all.
Or would it not? Would they require some zoning or general plan action?
Mayor, Council, the obviously the zoning change is needed.
But a general plan.
Then from there, it depends upon which the zoning districts they want to go in and really exactly how they're planning to develop the property. As I understand it, as was mentioned a minute ago, this indoor storage, it's not exactly what we typically imagine in a business park, but it can still fit with the zoning designation.
Statutorily, it can fit within general plan designation.
It could.
Okay. Councilmember Richards.
Beth, I'm glad you're here for this discussion. There's no sewer service to this parcel.
No.
Is there any way to get sewer service to this parcel, or is it because it's down the hill that there's slope issues? Or
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, no, there's not currently sewer service to this site. The Sunshine Acre site to the south, sewers south down to Longbow, and there is a private lift station at that point that they operate and maintain that pumps then further south to McDowell. This isn't a hole as far as the sewer system is.
I'm sorry, when you say they, Longbow operates that?
Sunshine Acres does. Okay. Thank you. This site, as well as just across the freeway, are in a bit of a hole in regards to attaching to sewer by gravity. Ultimately, we are looking at the need for this area to be served by a lift station for the entire area. Directly across the street, there's a small development, and they are currently, on septic tank and have installed a dry sewer to ultimately connect out into Higley. So this site, they were planning in the interim to install a septic tank, and then with the dry sewer, that would, when we come in to install the area lift station, would then connect into the area lift station.
Okay, thanks. I just think that, I mean, that presents some of the significant development issues of developing the site outside of, I mean, this is actually, I think this is a great use for the site. I think it's a great location for this property. I don't have any issues with it. I think this deal is a no-brainer. We need to really go forward with it if we can. That sewer thing really makes it tough to do an office project or anything of significance, and especially the overflight issues as well. And so I really think this is probably a good use for this site. And my biggest concern was photo number one with the paint peeling on the truck. I think we probably should evaluate getting that truck painted. But anyway, thank you.
I think the printer was a little bit off that.
Real quickly, what effect does that, that looks like a fairly significant wash that goes across this property. What effect does that have? Because that looks like, I mean, can you disturb that?
From my understanding, it's not one of those.
Yeah, it's not a 404.
It's not a 404 wash.
As I understand it.
But there is,
And I mean, and that is something that's been designated, or is that our idea that it's not a 404?
I don't believe it's currently identified in any of the flood controls plans as that. However, I'm going to be caveat this, because every development that occurs has to convey the historical flows through or around their site. It will be a development issue for the site, however they deal with it.
Mayor?
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
I have like three major issues, but the first one is when I went to the site, got out of the car, walked around, and then I got on the freeway, came at it from both directions, exited the freeway. The only place you can see the sign, well, actually, there's visibility from the sign coming westbound on the 202. However, it's blank on that side. Okay. The only place you really can see our for sale sign is northbound on Higley, and maybe southbound if you turn and look backwards. You can't see it at the intersection. You can't see it southbound. You can't see it on the entrance ramp. So my concern is at what I know it's been marketed through multiple other marketing ways, but a lot of times people see a sign and say, hey, something's for sale, especially like local businessmen that are looking, women that are looking to see something, maybe move their office, they're not real, but hey, that's right down the street, that kind of thing. And by kind of, I don't want to say tucking it into a corner, we really could have moved the sign further east and it would have been visible in all those directions, but it's kind of not in a good location. I feel that we're not fully disclosing that the city has property that we're selling. So that's an issue I have. I don't think we have really, you know, this little sign, and through the pictures you can see where when you look at it from the east looking west, it's blank. It's not a double-sided sign. So without literally having a sign that people can see, it kind of has that thing that we're trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes, which of course we're not. So that's an issue that I have. And something came up today where you said a reverter clause that ADOT spoke about.
That's correct.
You know, I don't know, did we ever talk to who the reverter of the property was to see if they're interested in this? Okay, that was a question, but let me just keep rolling my questions. And three, if you look on an overall map, you actually have the Longbow development touching that ADOT piece off to the east, which, of course, touches the Sunshine Acre piece, which just touches the City of Mesa piece. So, you know, have we ever even contemplated talking to Longbow about the possibility of, and ADOT, of getting that, you know, connecting Longbow to this with maybe a street right away through the Sunshine Acres parcel? I know that's a big stretch, but I mean, it is connected. It's right next to the big, huge parcel 3 on Longbow that accesses the freeway.
Mayor, Council Member Higgins, no, we had not, you know, okay, thought about that and going the long ways down.
And then, sorry. So, go ahead. And okay. And one other thing to mention to Councilmember Richens is that if you look at this picture, in order to access the site, you have to, if you're coming with an RV or a trailer, there's nothing that you can cut into the site. You have to actually go down to in front of Sunshine Acres and make a U-turn, which obviously is not going to be practical when you're hauling a boat or a trailer or RV or a RV with a trailer. You actually will be coming from the south north on Higley. So, you know, this traffic, you're getting off at Higley, I'm sorry, Wrecker or Greenfield, and coming north, because you can't make a U-turn in the street. So there's no direct access off the freeway, so that, you know, that's a perfect location, because that's freeway access, not necessarily the case when you're hauling track. No, but I mean, you can make a U-turn with a car, but I don't think you're really good when you're pulling a horse trailer, a 40-foot bass boat, or how long they are to make a U-turn, you know?
Anyway, it's not that hard.
I have, and Dean is right.
So, that's just a current, you know, that's just a statement. Well, that's not.
Okay, Vice Mayor?
I'm fascinated by all the reasons trying to stop this sale, and I respect the efforts, but we're not here to manipulate who buys that. It's been on the market. It's been multiple years on the market. All the big players have realized that sitting out by itself, it's not conducive to do any retail or a business office because it's away from everything else. It's kind of isolated. And this is, quite frankly, a very good use for it. And I'm, for one, I'm ready to just go ahead and move forward with the sale. Even though it's right there to freeway access, it's not conducive to good access for the very reason that you'd have to be coming northbound on Higley to get on it anyway. So I feel the proposed use should work out fine, and I'm ready to go forward with the sale.
Hey, Councilmember Finter.
Thanks. I know we're tight on time. Weigh in. I appreciate Councilmember Higgins making sure we don't leave any money on the table. I think with all the considerations of sewer, site preparation, we're getting about 5 times return on the dollar. In reality, being able to, you know, the purchaser being able to tie it up for 6 months and then another almost a year, I'd be surprised if this goes through. But I would support the way it's going now. But I do appreciate watching every dollar and how we approach a sale of our land.
Is there a zoning contingency asked for yet?
No.
Okay. But there are multiple other reasons why they can kill the deal.
Of his feasibility, he'll determine. Yeah,
with the six-month feasibility. It's always strange that the city sells lands and has zoning contingency, and it's the ultimate conflict, but that's all right. Okay. Once again, the purpose for this meeting, I believe, was just to receive additional information. We're not taking any action on this in the morning, so I thank you very much for that. Okay.
But Mayor, the question, though, is do we bring this back to council consideration? We pulled it off the last agenda. So that's the question.
I put it up to support putting it on.
Well, I guess then we do need to have, is there anyone, Councilmember Higgins?
I honestly believe that you need better signs and let it sit on the market for another 6 to 8 months.
You would not be in favor of moving forward?
No, not at all.
Is there anyone else who would not be in favor of moving forward with this? Let's put it back on the agenda then.
Thank you. If
that's what I sense, and we can discuss it at that time. Okay, the next item, appointment to boards and committees. I think, believe in your packet, you had Mr. Egan to report to the housing. We have a motion by Councilmember Kavanaugh, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. We'll skip number 5 because Mr. Brady and I have a meeting we have to be to in Phoenix. Scheduled meetings and general information, Mr. Brady.
Next study session will be January 22nd. That will be followed by a public safety committee meeting. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak for citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Vice Mayor, second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you very much.